Good morning, everyone. Let's take a moment to center ourselves, becoming present in the moment here, as we listen to our prelude music. This morning, Frank has selected Barcarolle by Tchaikovsky.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Tena koto, te whānau, o Auckland Unitarians. Tena koto, nā manuhiri. Nō mai, haere mai, ki tēne whare karakia o te atua. Ko jandaleo toko inua. Nō reira, tena koto, tena koto, tena tato katoa. Good morning. Welcome, everyone, from near and far, to this physical space made sacred by Auckland Unitarians since 1901, as well as to our virtual sanctuary. Welcome also to those watching the recording at a later time. My name is John DeLeo, and I'll be leading our service today. My welcome words are by Erica Hewitt. Welcome to this morning, this day, and this opportunity to be together in community, which is a time of joy, comfort, and sometimes challenges. This Unitarian Universalist congregation is a place where we come to learn more about being human. We're not here because we figured out life's questions or because we think we've got it right. We come here to learn more about being in relationship together, how to listen, how to forgive, how to be vulnerable, and how to create trust and compassion in one another. Let us move into worship, willing to be authentic with each other, honest within ourselves, and open to connection in all its forms. Our opening words today are by Reese Williams. Spirit of life, come to us to break down barriers, to widen horizons, to make us less judgmental. Help us to see the larger picture and the kinder conclusion, to love and let live, to embrace and forgive, to sustain and care. Help us to reach out to our better selves, that we may love more and hate less, care more and reject less, that bound together by understanding, we may sustain each other through trial and tribulation, through joy and happiness, through sickness and health. Help us, O God, to be joined in a common purpose of hope and fulfillment. Renew and revive us. We seek a common holy ground for one and all. Amen. By failing to prepare, I'm going to take a chance. Betsy, would you be so kind as to light the chalice this morning? Whether you are from the south, the east, the north, or the west, whether you were born into this faith, found it, or it found you, whether you feel at home or are still trying to find your place, whether you believe in God, are open to mystery, or still have no idea, whether you are unemployed, underemployed, cobbling things together, overworking, or in school, whether you are holding anxiety, grief, confusion, anger, hope, restlessness, or deep peace, Unitarian Universalism has a place for you. It is right here, and this chalice is lit for you. Please now join with me in affirming the covenant of our congregation. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is the sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve humankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony, thus do we covenant with each other and with our God. So today, I'm going to read a sermon originally presented by Bruce A. Bode. The sermon's undated, so I can't quite tell you the contextual anchor for some time references he gives. It's titled, Living with Contradictions. After the reading, I'll follow up with just a few comments. Living with Contradictions. About 20 years ago, I read a book that I've never discussed with anyone, but which has stayed with me and intrigued me all this time. Titled Religions of America and edited by Leo Rosten, it is an attempt to describe as clearly and as concisely as possible the variety of religious faiths in America. One chapter, written by scientist, mathematician, and educator Dr. Warren Weaver, is titled The Religion of a Scientist. Dr. Weaver's approach to religion was influenced by a principle from science called the principle of complementarity. This was a principle developed by physicist Niels Bohr to try to describe the nature of the elementary units of light, electrons and photons. Under some experimental conditions, these behaved as though they were particles. But under other experimental conditions, they behaved as though they were waves. Well, which was correct? Were they particles or were they waves? To the conventional physicist, they could not be both. They had to be one or the other. But Niels Bohr said they were both. He said the observer and the circumstances of the observer make a difference. And so you need a principle of complementarity to understand the nature of light. He said that under some observational circumstances, the units of light must be considered particles, and under other circumstances, they must be considered waves. By accepting the two contradictory descriptions and viewpoints, you have a more complete picture of light than you do by either one alone. In other words, he said the two viewpoints both contradict and complement each other. Both sets of information, even though they contradict each other, must be accepted as equally valid. One must learn to look at them as complementing each other, even though at first it may pain the mind to do so. We have to learn to live with the contradiction. This is the principle of complementarity, the principle of complementary perspectives. Dr. Weaver said applying this principle of complementarity to religion both sustained and liberated him. He said that in religion too, now quoting Dr. Weaver, if I ask a question from one point of view, I will have one answer. But sometimes if I ask the same question from another and quite different point of view, I may very well have a second answer. The second answer may seem inconsistent with the first, but it can be viewed as complementing the first, even though it is contradictory. And the two answers together will provide a richer, truer picture than either separately. So, for example, when Dr. Weaver asks himself about the nature of God from two different points of view, he receives two different answers. When he asks the question within an impersonal intellectual framework, he finds it satisfying to say that God represents the impersonal law, order, and design of things which run on their own, a kind of deistic position. On the other hand, when he is frightened or concerned about the safety of his loved ones, or wrestling with personal problems, or emotionally moved by a well-remembered hymn, then his view of God is paradoxically different. God is no longer impersonal design and law, but God is personal, the ever-dependable friend, the loving and protecting parent. Dr. Weaver says these two concepts seem inconsistent and contradictory, but they arise, he says, under mutually exclusive circumstances and can be viewed as complementary. We don't have to choose one to the exclusion of the other, and that provides a richer, a more complete, and a more deeply satisfying approach to life. As I said, this idea of complementary perspectives has stayed with me. This idea of simply letting seemingly opposing and contradictory positions dangle in my mind, and of not feeling compelled to reconcile them into one consistent system, or to decide for one over the other, but instead trying to hold the value of each. Let me speak about three ways in which I find this idea of complementary perspectives helpful. First, the principle of complementary perspectives recognizes the difference between truth and consistency. Truth is not necessarily consistent, and to be consistent is not necessarily to discern truth. G.K. Chesterton said that sanity consists in not worrying overmuch about consistency, that ordinary persons tend to stay sane because they care more for truth than they do for consistency. Ordinary persons, if they see two truths that seem to contradict each other, take the truths and the contradictions with them rather than throw out one of the truths. Their sight is stereoscopic, binocular. They see two different pictures at once and are healthier and larger for it. On the other hand, Chesterton pointed out that the extreme inconsistency can be found among those suffering from certain mental illnesses. He said that often one of the characteristics of the disturbed mind is an extreme consistency and a tremendous ability to connect one thing with another in an elaborate maze which is impossible to follow. You may feel that there is an error in their thinking, but try to find it. For given the starting point, everything is connected and consistent. The problem, therefore, is not that the logic is faulty, but that the premise is narrow. The problem is that the circle is too small. Too much reality has been left out. I find the same to be true of very consistent religious and philosophical systems. One may feel that there's some error in a given system and that it doesn't feel at all right. It seems way off. But one may be hard-pressed to pinpoint the error because, again, the problem is not one of consistency. The problem is one of size. The system is too small. Actually, I believe one has the greatest feeling of error with the most consistent systems, because such systems have reduced themselves in size in order to achieve consistency. So in a way, the problem is really that the systems are too consistent. That is, they have chosen consistency over reality. They have chosen to be airtight, and thus they suffer from a lack of air. And when we find ourselves suffocating, struggling for air, or becoming defensive and rigid, or even a little paranoid, perhaps it's because in our mental outlook we are trying to be too consistent. Perhaps our system needs to breathe a little. It needs a little more air. It needs a little less concern about consistency and a little more concern about reality. The map is not the territory, as the saying goes, and life is larger than any system that attempts to make sense of it. It is larger than our notion of consistency. It is larger than our intellect, which sometimes seems as if it would like to reduce reality to a sphere, about the size of a human head. This leads me to a second comment, one that has to do with the role of the intellect in our life. It's simply this, that the intellect is to be a servant, not a master. This is not to say the intellect is unimportant, or that we are free to be sloppy in our thinking. The intellect is terribly important. It is our great gift, our distinguishing attribute. We wouldn't know what human life would be like without this instrument. We must strive to use it well. But we need to recognize its function, its role, its value, its utility as a tool or instrument to help us find our way through life. And I believe that ideas and concepts are also tools. And like tools, they need to be sharpened, and when they have become dull, And like tools, they need to be sharpened when they have become dull, or replaced when they have been worn out. Just think how many ideas and concepts and beliefs you have worn out over your lifetime. Think how many beliefs you have believed, how many opinions you have held, ideas that once served you well, beliefs that were important to you, how they change, how they shift, how they wear out, how they lose their importance. Take one's childhood image and idea of God, for example. Children easily pick up and are attracted to an image of God as an all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-loving parent. They love to speak and pray to God. They love to pour out their hearts to God. They know that God is an advocate for them. It's an idea and image that works for them. But later, as they grow older, they may need a new concept of and image of God to keep pace with new needs, new experiences, and new understandings. It may be a concept that in certain ways contradicts and is inconsistent with the earlier idea and image. But I think it can be viewed as complementary. It's not necessary to call the former idea false. or to belittle it from a present superior position. It was true to that age and to those experiences and to those needs and understandings. There was something true about it. As parents, we are right not to rob our children of their childhood image of God, or, for that matter, to look disrespectfully on our own childhood image and idea of God. On the other hand, we need to be able to move on to new ideas and beliefs and images when that becomes necessary. We ought not let our ego and identity get too attached to what we have always believed. That is how we lose our youthfulness of spirit. When we try to hold on when a concept isn't working for us anymore, we diminish, flatten, and shrink ourselves. We become stuck. This is the refusal of the call of life. So ideas, concepts, and beliefs are tools for us, and we need a whole lot of them to make it through a lifetime. Who knows what beliefs we may yet come to find helpful? As we build and build, idea complements idea, thought builds upon thought. Sometimes we need to remodel. Sometimes we need to retool. And there's no need to be embarrassed by our past or to beat up on ourselves for what we may now regard as worn out or childish ideas. The present complements the past. The third thing the complementary approach can do is to open us to the value of what is rejected by one idea. The intellect tends to work by setting one thing against another, perhaps necessarily so. It says yes to one proposition and no to another. It conquers by dividing. Do we have free will or are we determined? Are we products of nature or products of nurture? Is the universe purposeful or purposeless? In pursuing one of these pairs, the truth of the other side gets rejected. But what about that which is rejected? We have little sayings which try to correct this one-sidedness. One of my favorites is, for every truth, there is an opposite, which is also true. The complementary approach tries to keep us open to looking for the truth in what the intellect tosses aside in pursuing one path. It's a both-and approach. So the universe can be both purposeful and purposeless at the same time. It depends on our context. We don't have to decide for just one over the other. Find the truth in each one, even though we can't fit them together in a consistent way. We can follow the arguments of each position, so just keep both of them going at the same time. Keep the vision stereoscopic. There's more reality in it. One of my favorite plays and movies is Fiddler on the Roof. And one of my favorite scenes from it is one in which Tevye, the main character, after listening to one person's argument on a subject, says, "You know, he's right." Then a second person, directly contradicting the first, says, "But that's nonsense. It's like this." And Tevye again says, "Yes, that's right." A third person interjects, saying, "He's right and he's right too? They can't both be right." To which Tevye sheepishly replies, "You know, you are also right." This is the complementary approach, the both and approach. If something comes along that makes sense, that has some truth in it for you, don't get too concerned, even if it seems to contradict previous beliefs and positions. Don't reject it just because it doesn't fit well into the already existing compartments of your mind. Simply add a new compartment, or add a new belief, or add a new perspective. Fit the beliefs to the evidence rather than discarding the evidence because it doesn't fit your beliefs. Ralph Waldo Emerson would approve, "A foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds." See, it's a Unitarian sermon. It mentions Emerson. For example, is there life after death? Try out the approach of complementary perspectives. On the one hand, surely we are part of nature and cycle and recycle in the way nature does. From dust to dust, and to dust thou shalt return. We die, and nothing remains, only the residue of memory for a time. On the other hand, can anything once conscious just disappear? Our departed loved ones sometimes return in our dreams and visions with more reality than they ever had in the flesh. The psyche has a reality of its own. It is not bound by the dimensions of space and time. There's a vertical dimension, not just a horizontal dimension. This is another perspective, and they can both play in us and other perspectives as well. So the complementarity principle holds that we do not have to choose just one belief out of many on a given subject. Instead, we can take different perspectives and stay with the truth and the feeling that appeals to us in each of them without worrying, first of all, about how or whether they fit with other ideas. With respect to an image of God, for example, we can be theist, deist, polytheist, pantheist, atheist, and agnostic all at once. There can be something in each perspective that speaks to us and carries a truth for us. At one time, we may lean more in one direction, and at another time, in another. We are never one thing only for the whole of our lives. We are never one thing at any given time. More than one spirit can live in us at once. Our intellects and ideas have a hard time keeping up with the immensity of reality. So, it seems to me that a principle of complementary perspectives and a willingness to live with paradox and even flat-out contradiction can help to keep us alive and open to this beautiful, terrible world in which we live. Now you're all wondering, why did he choose to read that? As we were driving home from last Sunday's service, I was thinking on what I should talk about this week. During last Sunday's service, we celebrated Clay's years with this church as our paid minister, and we acknowledged together that phase of our community's life was coming to a close. During the notices that day, Ted came to the front and reminded us all of the need for members to step up and fill the void Clay's retirement has created. We can no longer sit back and let him come up with all the ideas week after week because, to put it simply, it's not his job anymore. The theme or tagline that popped into my head during last Sunday's drive home was straightforward. One community, many voices. Or one community, many perspectives. Oh, that's why I chose that one. Simply put, we each have our own perspectives on matters of faith and spirituality. There are things we've read, music we've heard, and experiences we've had, which has crafted our own unique beliefs. Our beliefs may directly contradict those of other members of this congregation, but as the homilist said, these contradictory beliefs can serve to complement one another. Collectively, we are the community known as Auckland Unitarian Church. Our individual backgrounds, beliefs, and perspectives are the very bricks of which this house is built. So take some time to think about your beliefs and, importantly, how they came to be. The story of your journey is doubtless worth telling, and the rest of us would all be better for hearing it. Now, please join with me as we say the words for extinguishing the chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together. I missed one. Oh, no. The closing words I've selected today are by Andrew Pakula. As you prepare to leave this sacred space, pack away a piece of this church in your heart. Wrap it carefully like a precious gem. Carry it with you through the joys and sorrows of your days. Let its gentle glow strengthen you, warm you, remind you of all that is good and true, until you gather here again in this place of love. Now, as we listen to the postlude today, I'd like for each of you to quietly reflect on this question. If I were our speaker on an upcoming Sunday, what would I use that opportunity to talk about? Then afterward, let's get together in small groups for 10 to 15 minutes and workshop each other's ideas. Ask questions and provide suggestions, as in, yes, and you could also, to help one another flesh out those ideas. I'm confident that at least a couple of you will come away with a really great idea for a future Sunday talk. So before that idea fades, take a moment to talk with Ted or me or one of the other worship associates. We can help you turn that idea into a reality in the coming months. So see, there was a point to all of this. For our postlude, Frank has selected Over the Bars by J.P. Johnson.